From the Opubco studios at Britain and Broadway, you're listening to a News OK podcast.
Hi, this is Brandy McDonald, entertainment writer for the Oklahoman and News OK. I'm here with George Lang, and this is one of our entertainment podcasts. This week we're going to talk about movies that are opening in Oklahoma City theaters. Guys, the peak of summer has passed, and so you're not getting the top shelf of the movies here.
You know, this might be the last day of July, but it's been August for a while.
The quality of the films has been, let's say, going a bit downhill lately, but I think we're going to start with one that's fairly strong called Adoration, and George reviewed that.
Right, this is the latest from Adam McGoyan, and it's a pretty low-key affair. It wouldn't normally be the first thing we talked about, but it's the only in-house review we've got this week. So, like I said, this is from Adam McGoyan, who's the Canadian sort of master of brooding despair and self-examination and Adoration. It's about a teenager named Simon, who's played by Devin Bostick, who lost his parents about 5 years before the action that we're seeing, and he lives with his uncle Tom, who's played by Scott Speedman, and they're in Toronto, and both are fairly haunted by the deaths of Simon's parents, Tom's sister and brother-in-law, and the official word is that Simon's mom, Rachel, who's played by Rachel Blanchard, and his father, Sammy, who's played by Noam Jenkins, were killed in a car accident. But there's been a lot of talk in the family, especially from the dying grandfather, who's played by a veteran character actor named Kenneth Welch. If you see him, you've recognized him. You've seen him in a million things. Sort of muddies the waters for Simon with his racially motivated insistence that Sammy, who was a Palestinian, killed Rachel. Okay, now. Enter one of Simon's teachers, a French teacher named Sabine, who's played by Arsene Kanjian, who's Adam McGoyan's wife, with an assignment to translate an old news story about a terrorist attack in which a husband had his pregnant wife go on an Israel-bound passenger jet with a loaded bomb, and so Simon, who has always been filled with questions about his parents, and then sort of had the waters muddied at least psychically by his grandfather, does a very personal translation of this story where he inserts his parents into the key roles of the story. Okay, and so Sabine, she's she's obviously intrigued by this, and she has Simon, stage this as sort of a dramatic reading for his class. This kind of gets around this story, and it becomes a subject of huge discussion in the community. You have
we've got routine French assignment turned huge potboiler debate.
Exactly. So you've got this in chat rooms where you've got Simon's classmates who are debating this issue alongside people who survived the flight, survivors of the Holocaust, overt racists are entering into this.
I'm sure you got some white supremacists on the internet.
Exactly. Oh yeah, you wouldn't imagine. But so all of this is sort of coming to a boil around this this teenager who's kind of had the weight of the world on his shoulders anyway, and now this decision to go forward with this story has really intensified things. From the sounds of it, it sounds like a really intense sort of intrigue, but it's much more of a personal examination of the sort of ripple effects of tragedy, how things affected Simon and especially his uncle. Scott Speedman, who we know from Felicity, that was one of his where I think U.S. audiences were introduced to him. He gives a really
Underworld series, I guess. After that,
that's right. He gives a really good performance here.
He's not a werewolf,
and he's really good. I mean, most of his roles have been sort of like, you know, other than Felicity, have been sort of like B level roles, but he does a really nice job here, As it is in most Egoyan films, there are really no easy answers here. Egoyan kind of keeps things kind of confusing, purposely confusing, because you see Simon's parents in both their real life, you know, flashbacks to their real life, and a life that may or may not have been real, which is, you know, their lives as these people who took down a plane bound for Tel Aviv, you know. So you don't know. I mean, in some respects, you wonder, well, you know, is this a completely composite of Simon's imagination and this news story, or did it really happen? And we just don't know. So Egoyan purposely confuses the point just to kind of free us up to some possibilities of how things turn out here. So it's really an acquired taste. Egoyan films always are. They're not always easy to digest, but this one it's excellent anyway. And I've loved just about everything that Egoyan has done, but this is really it's kind of flying under the radar, but I definitely recommend it.
So. From here on out, we're going to be wagging our famous finger of shame
for movies
that were not screened.
This might
in
be
advance.
The greatest summer tragedy
and so many fingers are being waved. We're going to have to add extra hands.
Yeah.
But if you are in the mood for something that's a little more humorous than Adoration, there is a new Judd Apatow movie opening called Funny People.
Right.
It was not screened in the Oklahoma City market.
Universal
Apatow acolyte deluxe.
Yeah,
that George is. This is a personal tragedy and affront to him. So, it was screened in some markets for critics. We do have an AP review from Christy Lemire, and so George and I are going to discuss the AP review. George is going to give us the plot background.
Okay. Well, the basic idea here is. Adam Sandler plays a comic named George Simmons, one of these superstar comics on the order of, you know, an Eddie Murphy or, well, I don't know, an Adam Sandler, if you will.
Yeah.
Finds out that he has some sort of malignant blood disorder, and so he's dying, and while he's kind of going through this period of woe is me, he decides to hire an aspiring comic who's played by Seth Rogen to be his sort of go-to guy,
assistant,
a combination
joke
of
writer,
assistant, kinda. Joke writer, caretaker, just a on-call buddy. And so it's a lot about how people who are creative and are happy, at least on the outside, not necessarily are. I mean, we know the stories about like Dave Letterman. Dave Letterman is a funny guy on camera, but he's a notoriously morose individual on a person-to-person level. And so it's kind of like that. This is what Judd Apatow has kind of constructed, is a look at behind the laughing eyes of the comedian. It's not getting the kind of reviews that his previous films like Knocked Up and The 40-Year-Old Virgin have gotten.
Right. We're reading that it does have a lot of that sort of trademark raunchy humor.
Of course.
With some sort of sweetness or emotion kind of tinged through it.
That's right.
We're also hearing that it does a very good job and a very interesting job of sort of delving you into the world of stand-up comedians.
Absolutely.
And how they prepare, how they hone their craft, how they get going in
what
that.
What kind of personalities
so
are actually there?
What kind of personality
there?
It takes. Was some actual right. old footage of Adam Sandler when he was starting out, because he and Apatow were really good friends. I think
they were actually college roommates.
Yes,
at one point.
Before
yeah.
either one of them made it big.
That's
so
right.
Some actual home movie footage of Sandler as a starting out stand-up.
Right.
I think what Christie's assessment of the film was is it does pretty well up until about the third act, where Adam Sandler and Seth Rogen's character go on kind of a road trip to find Adam's character's sort
right.
of the one who got away.
That's
his
right.
former sweetheart, who's played by Leslie Mann.
Who's Judd Apatow's wife.
Right, an extremely hilarious
yes.
actress. And she says that kind of road trip sort of falls apart and then kind of undoes a little bit of the momentum that had been built for the first
right.
two-thirds of the
that,
film.
I mean, that, and that road trip contains, you know, the some key scenes with Leslie Mann and Eric Bana, who plays her husband.
Wealthy Australian.
That's right. And apparently he's quite good. He's a real mm-hmm. scene stealer in this. Of course, Bana himself got his start as a stand-up comic in Australia.
And is now a wealthy Australian living in America.
That's right.
This is a very so, meta film.
That's right. That's right. You're in the existential taffy pull of Judd Apatow. But apparently this kind of the rhythms go off with this sequence, and if you consider the fact that this film is 2 hours and 25 minutes, well, this kind of folds in with one of the chief criticisms of Apatow films, is that he needs an editor. He needs somebody to kind of hold things back. And it's possible that if he had stayed with the general idea of this film about
comedians, funny film about death.
That's
basically.
Right, a funny film about death and about how funny people react to difficult things.
Right.
That would have probably been a better, tighter film. Right. As it is, you know, I can't. As I haven't seen it, I'm going to see it. I will see it this weekend because I'm such a fan of of Apatow's concepts, his sensibility, just the general comic milieu of the guy. I mean, he's
it's a bold concept. I mean, it's a risky concept. It's going outside of what his comfort zone is.
What he's done, and this is just based on everything I've read about it. Because
right.
again, haven't seen it. Thank you, Universal. But.
You've really made him mad. He's going to switch the finger that he's using for the finger. Shame if you don't watch it.
But but what he's done here is he's made a James L. Brooks movie. You know,
with the
Apatow sensibility, and there's not a thing wrong with that. So you know, personally, I'm gonna guess that most people are right on this, that it isn't quite up to that level. But I cannot hold it against Apatow for wanting to move things up a little more, move things forward a little bit, make a film that is saying just a little more about human condition.
Well, and credit Adam Sandler, because he's taking on a more substantive role. And my understanding is that he does a lot of sort of poking fun at himself in his own career,
right.
playing these sort of perpetual adolescent characters and how he's built his career on that in the film. So
right.
we're hearing
and
good things about his performance. It's a brave performance. It takes a lot of guts to let somebody make fun of you for being you.
Talk about
you
meta.
Do it.
I mean, you know, if you think about it, I mean, here's Sandler taking on a serious role where he's playing a guy who's played a lot of, you know, goofball roles, and Sandler himself is a guy who has tried to break out of the goofball roles with some pretty, I'd say some pretty great performances in Punch
Spanglish.
Drunk Love and Spanglish. I mean, he was really good in those films. And so the George Simmons character, it's really not that far off from the man himself. So I mean, we're gonna, you know, Christy Lemire gave this 2.5 stars, but you know,
she definitely didn't hate it.
But she didn't hate it. And I'll tell you, you know, there's, you know, anything that Apatow is going to do that he directs, that he's got mm-hmm. his fingerprints on. I mean, not just producing,
right.
but this is one of his movies. It's not something to ignore, and if you're a fan of his at all, you have to go see Funny People. So
speaking of things that can be ignored, the final three movies on our list, we wag the finger of shame, but not as.
Can you feel this?
There's
fingers that are waving. Can you feel the breeze?
There's a breeze coming off of
it. That's right.
But not as vehemently as we did for Funny People, because these are three films that weren't screened for any critics anywhere all over the country. There are a few. One of them has been seen by a few sort of horror specialty websites.
Right.
But for the most part, none of these have been seen by virtually any critic anywhere. There's no wire reviews out there until Friday afternoon, things like that. So these are movies that are basically, I mean, honestly, this is a case of studios cleaning out their closets. It's August, they don't care anymore, so they're dumping it's like their garage sale.
You can smell the dust wafting off of the film canisters.
And if you decide to try and pick up a bargain at the garage sale of the movies this weekend, that is your business. But here's what you're going to have to choose for. Aliens in the Attic is one of them. I just have a brief description of it. And it's a family film. It was formerly called They Came From Upstairs, so you may have heard of it by that title. Co-written by one of the writers of Madagascar and the Oscar-winning Wallace and Gromit: Curse of the Were-Rabbit, which is one of my personal favorites. Yeah,
High School Musical fame.
So the writing, good, but again, not screaming in advance for critics anywhere, so that's a bad sign. It's basically billed as an adventure comedy about kids on a family vacation who have to fight off an attack of knee-high alien invaders who have world-destroying ambitions.
So it's E.T. if he was angry.
Yeah, and they have to keep it from their parents at the same time. So, again, you noted it stars Ashley Tisdale, Andy Richter, former SNL players Kevin Nealon and Tim Meadows, and Doris Roberts from Everybody Loves Raymond fame. So there's that. Street Dreams. This is a film that co-stars and was co-written by skateboarding king Rob Dyrdek. I don't know if I pronounce his last name right. I don't follow competitive skateboarding. I apologize. Mm. But it's a drama about competitive skateboarding.
I can't imagine.
Teenager Derek Cabrera, who's played by Paul Rodriguez, love for skateboarding consumes his whole life.
This is Paul Rodriguez Jr., by the way. It's not
yes.
not the stand-up comic.
Not
his
yet.
Son.
His son. But yeah, he's disappointment to his parents and his girlfriend because he's totally consumed by skateboarding, and he just wants a sponsorship for his skills, and he engages in this competitive Tampa Am contest in the hopes of realizing his dream. So it's a sport drama, basically, about skateboarding. The last one is The Collector. It's sort of like the requisite horror movie of the bunch.
We're going to get a lot of those in the next few weeks.
It follows the story of an ex-con named Arkin, who's played by Josh Stewart, who's best known for TV's Criminal Minds, also had a small part in Curious Case of Benjamin Button. He aims to repay a debt to his ex-wife by robbing his new employer's country home. But when he breaks into the house, he discovers that the family is being held captive by a mass killer known as the Collector, who has turned the house into a, quote, maze of lethal invention, the Spanish Inquisition. The Spanish Inquisition, as imagined by Rube Goldberg. And he has to try to decide whether he's just going to try and get himself out or whether he's going to rescue the family that he came to rob.
And no one can stop the Spanish Inquisition.
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition, particularly with Rube Goldberg involved. But this script, a little bit more on this one. The script was written by Marcus Dunstan and Patrick Melton, who wrote the last couple of Saw films. They also wrote the horror film Feast. And Dunstan made his directorial debut with The Collector, and they made this film at Dimension Films. But after some consolidation, it looked like it wasn't going to see release. But film producer Mickey Liddell, who is from Norman, actually saw it, liked it, and got Liddell Entertainment. His company picked it up. He signed on as a executive producer, oversaw some reshoots, and saw that it got its release. So I have an interview with Liddell that's coming up Tuesday, so people can look for that.
So if you love the scripts for Saw movies...
Well, for the last couple, so yeah.
Oh yeah,
Feast. Feast was actually they got the Melton and Dunstan got picked up on HBO's Project Greenlight with Feast, and so people may be familiar if they haven't seen the movie, may have been familiar with the process that they went through to put that together on Project Greenlight. So
right,
but The Collector, it's a horror film. like I said, Mickey Liddell, I have a column with him. I haven't seen the movie, but I have a column or for my interview with him coming up Tuesday.
Excellent.
That's a strong word for the selection of movies we have for you this weekend. I would go more like, I would stop.
Okay.
At,
if you have a taste for the esoteric, go see Adoration. If you have a taste for the Apatow, go see Funny People. If you have a taste for things that have not been screened for the press, go to Angels in
yes,
the
if you
not, Aliens in the Attic.
Vintage discount merchandise of the cinematic quality, which we're charging full price for.
That's
then go see one of these other movies. So, but
that's right.
That's what your choices are.
Next week, much better. We've got 500 Days of Summer coming out. And
we have
Joseph Gordon-Levitt extravaganza. We have 500 Days of Summer, and he's opening against himself with the G.I. Joe Rise of the Cobra movie.
He's not a real American hero. He hates those.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know,
he fights them on the big screen.
I wonder who's going to win out at the box office. Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
That's who's going to win.
That's all we've got this week. For Brandy McDonald, I'm George Lang. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.